You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Today we're exploring how California is keeping track of its vast and changing landscapes as climate change and shifting land use impact wildlife and the state's natural ecosystems. Scientists are looking for better ways to track those changes in real time. Joining the exchange is Gary Bucciarelli, a professor and director of strategic engagement for the University of California Natural Reserve System at UC Davis. He also serves as the chair of the California Sentinel Sites for Nature. Welcome to the exchange, Professor.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, for having me.
Well, tell me about your work at UC Davis.
Well, the work right now that I'm focused on is launching this initiative in collaboration with the state, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, California State Parks, Agricultural and Natural Resources at UC Davis, along with external partners like the Nature Conservancy and Pepperwood Preserve even. And we're really focused on developing this innovative tool, an observatory, if you will, to understand what's happening to nature as we move through climate change and environments begin to shift.
Well, talk to me about a sentinel site and why they've become so critical in conservation efforts.
Yeah, so this project, California Sentinel Sites for Nature, which is what we've officially called it, is born out of 30 by 30, the executive order that Governor Newsom signed, which is actually a global effort with over 180 nations and subnational entities participating in this global conservation effort. And it's designed to create these sites that we're calling sentinel sites where we can have long-term standardized monitoring for wildlife. And there are two key words there that make the sentinel sites so important and powerful, and that's standardization and long-term. So we'll have standardized monitoring, which means everybody is following the same protocols to monitor the nature around us, and the long-term effort means that the data can be used over time to track what's happening in ecosystems. And because it is standardized, all of those data across the entire state are interoperable, meaning anybody can access these data and ask really broad-scale questions about a certain taxonomic group or, you know, more broadly, the ecosystem.
Okay, and so this data is going to be used by researchers and policymakers, and you mentioned that the governor's executive order is 30 by 30. Briefly tell me, what does that mean, 30 by 30?
Yeah, it's very simple, actually, which is great. 30 by 30 is protect 30% of California's lands by 2030, and I think we're doing really great right now.
Okay, well, your program has a motto called, it says that it's monitoring nature's pulse. So what are the goals? What are the primary goals that and objectives that you're trying to achieve?
Yeah, well, in simple terms, like I think a lot of people would agree that Mother Nature needs a checkup. You know, things are not always so great, right? And the ecosystems we see around us are changing. The wildlife we appreciate and love in California, all of our diversity of wildlife is changing. And so what we mean by having sort of this index of health of ecosystems, and that's really how we think these data can be really powerful to provide long-term understandings to help shape goals related to conserving and protecting nature. So we can do this a couple of ways by researchers, policymakers, NGOs working all together to parlay these data into meaningful metrics that give us that snapshot and the broader picture too, the wide angle perspective of what's happening in ecosystems.
Well, you mentioned that you're standardizing the collection of this data. Now, I know scientists a lot of times can agree to disagree, and they disagree a lot. I'm not sure how you got everyone on the same page with this standardized process. Can you tell me about the framework and how it came about?
Yeah, this was a Herculean effort undertaken by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, led by our great collaborator, Lindsay Rich, who pioneered these methods through their California Environmental Monitoring and Assessment Framework, which we call CEMAF, C-E-M-A-F for short. And the idea there was that there was cannabis cultivation occurring throughout the state, and the CDFW really wanted to know what's happening to wildlife around these sites, and is it positive, negative, is it neutral? And so they created this monitoring protocol to use technology like camera traps or wildlife cameras and audio recorders set up in the wild to monitor animals and really understand what was happening around these sites. Then when 30 by 30 came to be, the state and a lot of stakeholders and collaborators came together and said, let's build this Sentinel site network to give us the baseline data we need to understand what's happening, and then collect these data long-term in a standardized way to see how ecosystems are changing, in what direction and in what ways. So CMAF was the core that, you know, enabled the sort of methods. And from there, they've been adopted by the Sentinel Sites for Nature Network. And this program is now deploying these pieces of equipment across 512 sites in the state and aiming to, you know, take those data, have them all validated and verified of what's in the data that's being collected for species recognition, and then use those data to set the baseline. So that's one big objective there, is set that baseline for the state of what wildlife is where and when, and then be able to look at how that changes over time. That's the tracking objective we have.
Okay. Now, you said there are 512 sites. Is that enough?
Well, it's a good question. And, you know, as we launch this, we think it's a really good start. It basically represents every ecosystem type across the state. So we've got desert sites, we've got marine sites, we've got high elevation conifer forests, we've got redwood forests, and everything in between. And we're going to see what it tells us. Remarkably, the state, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, will use these data to do hindcasting and forecasting of where species are occurring. So this is a really cool idea that basically will say, you know, 50 years ago, 30 years ago, this is where mountain lions might have been, and predict out from today, 50 years, where we would expect them to be. And they'll keep tracking and using these data to understand what we call species distributions across the state. And as we move through this process of not only using the data for that, but these health indices that we think can really give all of the people of California a good idea of how well nature is doing and how it can benefit them, and really, in a nutshell, bring the value to the front of everybody's mind of how valuable nature is. Once we start gathering all these data, we will assess, like, do we need more? Is there too much? Because there is a, you know, huge hurdle to jump with processing all of these data.
My guest is Gary Bucciarelli. He's a professor and director of strategic engagement for the University of California Natural Reserve System at UC Davis. He also serves as the chair of the California Sentinel Sites for Nature. Now, Professor, beyond the animals, you're also tracking the weather. How does having a weather station at the same site as wildlife monitoring change the way we understand climate impact?
Yeah, no, this is a really great point to bring up. And we've been monitoring the climate in California in the UC system for probably over 10 to 15 years at most of our sites. We have a network of 42 field stations across the state that provide incredible opportunities for research, but also education and service with communities through the Natural Reserve System. And having that climate paired across all of these sites allows us to get a really fine scale picture of what's happening at the sites and how climate and weather conditions at a finer temporal scale can explain what we're observing with the wildlife patterns. So the beauty of Sentinel Sites is you can have really localized understandings of what's happening at a site, and then you can expand that out and understand what's happening across ecoregions or the entire state.
And how do you use AI in your technology?
Yeah, you can imagine if any of your listeners or yourself have set out wildlife cameras, you get thousands upon thousands of photos. And our technology requires cameras like that to be set out. We have another modified camera type that faces down with a little barrier to allow small animals to pass through a little box and get photographed, like weasels and mice, snakes. So we keep track of all those things. And then we have these recording units that are ARUs, autonomous recording units, that collect sound on birds and bats. And we use the AI to process the millions upon millions of recordings, either images or sound, that are being collected at these 500-plus deployment sites.
And so how do you check to make sure that the AI is not hallucinating or giving you false information?
Yeah, I was talking to someone about this yesterday, and they were fascinated by the term of hallucination, which is a phenomenon that occurs in AI where you feed the AI a camera image of a, say, bear, and it calls it a deer, right? So we invest a ton of time right now, especially Department of Fish and Wildlife, who have got a few years more data than some of the other partners, validating those classifications or identifications. And so someone will go through and actually verify that the AI was correct. And part of what we're working on right now are something called thresholds. So thresholds being used to kind of streamline this process a little bit more so we don't have to manually verify all of these images that get tagged as, you know, animals and species. We can rely on these thresholds that are set to say, if the AI is confident at 90% plus for a score, then whatever it calls it, say deer or bear, that's good and you don't have to verify that one. But if it's below that threshold, then you need to go back and look at those images. And so we feel that this approach will streamline our processing quite a bit, and excited to see how it goes.
Well, you mentioned you're using sound recorders.
Mm-hmm.
How does the call of birds or bats or any other animal, how do those sounds help you understand the health of an ecosystem?
Yeah. So one of the things that we talk about in the scientific community is this term called biodiversity, and it just means nature. And what we're thinking about with nature is the more species you have, the better the ecosystem is, the more resistant or resilient the ecosystem might be to change. And what we do with these recordings and audio files and the images is process them to understand everything that's there. And then we can get indices that we use in ecology to assess how diverse or how much biodiversity exists at that site. And higher biodiversity tends to correlate with healthier ecosystems. And another caveat to that, there's always caveats in ecology, but is thinking about what species are actually there. And so that's another component of it, is you can have a really biodiverse site, but maybe all of those species are not so beneficial there, right? Like you could think about invasive species. Maybe it's invasive crayfish or invasive mammals like nutria. Knowing what's there and having a pulse on that biodiversity gives us an understanding of what the health of that ecosystem is like, because we know some of these species can create terrible problems in the ecosystem.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds left. If there's one thing you want Californians to understand about the state of our biodiversity today, based on what you're seeing at these sites, what would it be?
My comment would be that I think we all love nature a ton, and we really need to invest in understanding what's happening to nature and protecting the resources that are out there. It's critical at this point, and I think California has a lot to value and a lot to appreciate, and I think this effort brings that to the forefront for people to help us understand the intrinsic value of nature and to protect it.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Professor.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
My guest was Gary Bucciarelli, Professor and Director of Strategic Engagement for the University of California Natural Reserve System at UC Davis. He's also Chair of the California Sentinel Sites for Nature. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio.